through his own eyes. So this in itself is quite a subject in it to talk about. How can we perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead? There are some living entities who never see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, most of the living entities in this material world even doubt that it is possible to see, or they doubt that there is such a being as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in the Vedic scriptures, we often hear allegorical pictures where it is said that the fire of knowledge burns away ignorance, or it is said by the spiritual eye one can see, or it is said our spiritual eyes are opened, or it is said that if our eyes are decorated with love, then we can see Krishna. In other words, the Vedic scriptures always inform us that in the present condition it is not very easily possible to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because we don't have the instruments. Srila Prabhupada once gave a very nice example. He spoke of the radio waves. If you do not have the instrument to receive the radio waves, then the radio program will not be possible to be heard by you. However, if you take the right instrument, that would be the receiver for the radio waves, then you would be able to hear. Right here in this room, we might be able to hear a concert. Put our radio on full blast and we might hear the Belgrade morning news or morning concert. So in a similar analogous way, it is not possible for our dull material senses to perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, if we develop our ability to see, it is possible. In the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear about Narada Muni. Narada Muni was born as a maidservant's son and received the opportunity to associate with great souls. So after some time of serving them, these great souls, better like this, after they stayed for some time at Narada Muni's house, these great souls went on in their journey. So Narada Muni wanted to follow them immediately, but his mother was very attached to him. After all, he was her only son. So then one day his mother didn't return from milking a cow because a poisonous snake had killed her. So Narada Muni went and took this as a sign of the Lord. He went on a pilgrimage. At the end of this pilgrimage, he sat down in a dark jungle and began to meditate. And as a result of his meditations, he perceived the Supreme Lord within his heart. Now, if you see something in your heart, you can be rest assured that you are not looking through the eye, because the eye can't look into the heart. That's not constituted that way. If you see something within the heart, there are two possibilities. One is, you see something within your mind's eye. The mind in itself has also sense perception. For instance, I could now think of the kitchen, and I could interpret that the sound yee means there is a mill milling the muesli which we will take this morning. I could think like this. And in my mind's eye, I could imagine Bhaktin Vesna, the cook, operating this mill and making this muesli. And within my mind, I could see her being and taking some raisins and putting them in the muesli and so on and so forth. So within my mind, with my mind's eye, I can also see far distant places. There's something like astral projection, where a person leaves this material body and travels with the speed of mind to far distant places, and he actually perceives things there. With the mind, I can also go into the future. And sometimes I can perceive things which are there in the future. One of my friends, he once told me that he was lying in bed and he was sleeping, and in his dream he saw how he was going inside a house, and inside the house he had a terrible fight with his girlfriend, and he left this house never to return to his old girlfriend. So he was so shocked by this dream that he woke up his girlfriend, who was lying beside him, and said, "Listen, we just separated in the dream." And she laughed and said, "No possibility that we ever separate. I mean, we've just bought a whole house and so on. I'm pregnant from you. So why do you talk such shocking things?" But 6 months later, he went with his girlfriend into that same house which he had seen in the dream. And there they quarreled, and then he knew this is the end of our friendship, and they separated once and forever. His girlfriend later committed suicide. So this just shows you that the mind also has senses of seeing, but the functions of the mind senses are obviously different from the functions of the body senses. Also in a dream we sometimes eat. Also in a dream there is sometimes a feeling like sexual enjoyment. Also in a dream there's walking and there's hearing, but these sense functions exist on a subtle material platform. It is described that at the time of death, the soul goes together with the mind and its subtle sensual functions into another existence. These senses of the mind, so to say, are there in a seed-like form. And when the mind again, and when the soul and the mind again take on a new material body, those seed-like sensory functions, they emanate again into the gross senses of the body, and then it's when one is possible, then one is able to hear and see and taste and smell and so on and so forth. You can see how the subtle senses are actually directing the gross senses, because when you are absent-minded with your mind, I just caught you that. Then you don't hear. Have you ever noticed that someone is writing a letter and another person is entering that room? Because his mind is concentrated so much on the reality of the letter, he doesn't hear. It happens to me every day that I'm in my room and a lot of people are coming in the room and they want something from me, and I just don't hear them, nor do I see them, because I'm so much engaged with what I'm just doing that I can't relate to this physical reality which is happening around me. In yoga, you learn to take your consciousness away from the external sense manipulation. And for the yogi, this material reality stops as it is. There is an example of a yogi who once was sitting meditating, and a king with his royal dancers and his jokers and his elephants and his whole caravan of things passed him. However, because the yogi was so much had retracted his senses from the outward reality, he didn't see the Kralj, nor did he hear the king, nor did he perceive the dancers. He saw nothing of that sort, because his senses had gone back into the seed-like state of the mind. So, on our spiritual path, it is very important that we do something like that. That we take our senses away from material reality, or let us say material plans, by purifying our senses. Our senses will no longer like to be active in the material sense. They feel a natural distaste, because our senses are so much engaged with higher activities that we don't like to engage them any longer in lower activities. And this is perfect sense control. Not gratification, it is sense control. The devotee in Krishna consciousness is engaging his senses in a positive way. And by engaging his senses in the service of Krishna, in higher occupational activities, he's losing all the taste from material sense gratification. It is very, very difficult to just exist in a positive way by taking the senses within your mind and taking your mind within your consciousness. This process, which is performed in the mechanical yoga process, is actually dead. It is without life. And whenever the material reality presents itself in a very attractive way, the yogi, even despite his own will to control the senses, becomes active again. This is a great, if not the greatest, process on the path of impersonal yoga. To give you an example, I want to relate the story of Vishvamitra Muni, who became a very powerful mystic. In fact, it is stated that he became such a powerful yogi that he was able to manipulate the generation process. See, in his previous life, when he was not a yogi, this person was actually a great king. And as a king, he was very, very sensuous. He had many, many wives and was engaged in sense gratification with them all. So he created a lot of sons. And when he became a little bit enlightened in knowledge, he saw that his generation of sons, due to sexual intercourse, was mainly based on lust, on physical lust. And somehow he felt a strong distaste for this. Why am I so much a slave to my genital that all this I want to engage my genital with the opposite sex? That I, so much so that in order to please the opposite sex, I have become a rob, a slave. This is very much there in spiritual literature. That all of a sudden the king, he thinks, I'm trying to be a very courageous man fighting with my enemies, but when I come home to my queens, I kneel down on my knees and beg them to obtain a little sense gratification from them. So Vishvamitra Muni felt disgusted, and when he became a yogi, he said, from now on, human beings will not multiply by the sex, but the sex life, but they will grow on trees. And as you have heard several times, in mystic yoga, you can manipulate the natural processes around us. For instance, you can make it possible that milk flows from trees. You can do that for some time if you engage all your shaktis, that means all your power in this. You can revert the natural processes. For instance, this was one very powerful example, but what a more common example would be that the yogi travels through air. I saw in Haridwar, when we camped on the bank of the Ganga in order to take some rest from all our night programs, these were concerts and speaking programs just like we do now, I saw yogis walking down the Ganges to go to they came actually from Rishikesh and they wanted to go to Haridwar. And it was a common sight in the morning that these yogis would just walk down the Ganges. Somehow they thought it was very pleasant and very refreshing to the mind and the body. And they came and they greeted Hari Hari. And they greeted like this and they laughed because I had never seen this before, so I was a little bit interested. So this can be done. So Vishvamitra Muni had attained many powers. So one day he sat down he meditated, and Indra, he thought, well, this is a yogi, he's getting so powerful. Now he has already people growing from trees. What will be the next thing he is doing? Better we stop him. And he sent one of his dancers. It was a beautiful girl called Menaka, who had shoulders just like blue clouds. She was very, very attractive. And she began dancing before the yogi. Now the yogi, he was meditating with eyes closed and he didn't see her. So Menaka was making all her movements, which were very, in a way stimulating, which were meant to agitate the passion of Vishvamitra Muni. And he didn't see her. So what she did is she bound some bells around her legs and ankles and again began to dance. So this time Vishvamitra Muni heard her, and just by hearing the tinkling of the dance, tinkling, ting, tinkling, tinkling, ting, tinkling, ting, tinkling, he was so much agitated that he had to open his eyes and see who is that. And then he saw Menaka in the midst of the forest. The flowers were blooming and the smell was very wonderful. Then he became attracted to her, and actually he fell down from his high stage of yogic powers by simply becoming attached again to sexual intercourse, and as a result Shakuntala was born. So this is an example of someone who had attained mystical powers but who lost all these powers simply due to sense gratification. Now the sense gratification is a very, very powerful urge, and no one is free from it. It is very easy to fall down, especially when we have no high qualification. And Vishvamitra Muni, although he had these qualifications, he had to pay dearly for this. He lost all his powers. He could no longer perform this mystical feat. He could no longer contradict the laws of nature. And he had to start all over again. So therefore now this is a great danger, and yogis are very much aware of this, and that's why they leave civilization and they go go to the mountains, because they don't even want to see this illusions and they don't even want to hear of this. However, what they take with them is sometimes their greatest enemy. It's the the mind, which returns to material sense gratification and which thinks of these materialistic activities. And then, when this happens, the mind by and by takes away all the powers which they have obtained. It is described just like a lake is surrounded by these grass plants, and these grass plants gradually dry out all the water from the lake. In the same way, the mind is dried out when there are thoughts of sense gratification disturbing it, when it becomes powerless, like a dried out lake. So in a similar way, now I wanted to say, in Krishna consciousness, for someone who is rightly situated, this problem ceases. Why? Because he engages his senses in the service of the Lord. For instance, eating is well taken care of by eating only foods which are offered to Krishna. The devotee will not eat anything else than prasadam. Or as far as seeing things, the devotee is engaged in seeing the wonderful form of the Lord. In the beginning, he is seeing the form of the Lord by looking at pictures. Then at a higher stage, he is meditating about the form of the Lord, and he is seeing it in his mind's eye. And then at a still higher stage, he develops his spiritual vision, which arises in him when love of bhakti is anointing his spiritual eyes. And this powerful balm or cream on the eyes, so to say, on the spiritual eyes, awakens the spiritual eyes so that you can see on the spiritual platform with purified consciousness and purified senses the Lord's form and qualities and pastimes face to face. Now, this is of course a high state in Krishna consciousness, and at the beginning stages of spiritual life, it is not possible for us to immediately be on this high state of Krishna consciousness. We first must go through the process of austerity. Austerity means, although our senses are materialistic and they are used to material sense activities, we must control them by engaging them in service of Krishna. Then, by and by, by controlling our senses, we become more sensible. That means our other faculties are becoming intact. Our mind will naturally go or flow to the thought of Krishna. A devotee will like to think of Krishna. Wherever he is and whatever he does, the thought of Krishna comes quite natural to him without him having to force that. So that stage already makes the devotee more advanced than the mystic yogi, because the mystic yogi has to always fight with his with his mind, so that no past experiences of sense gratification come up. See, the mind is such a far out instrument that even without you wanting it, it sometimes presents mental images to you. The example which has been given is the bottom of a pond. When you have a pond or a little lake, sometimes bubbles of air come to the surface without you having, without you doing something. It makes bloop, and it is, has a foul smell. So in the same way, we can see how in our minds sometimes pictures come of our previous experience, especially the new devotee who begins with chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He sometimes has thoughts in his mind which he really didn't want. Do you know this from your beginning stages of chanting? Sometimes you see yourself playing piano in a concert room, or sometimes you see yourself with intoxication in your mouth, or you see yourself in activities which you really have stopped already. So this is the function of the mind. The yogi is not free from this. So he tries to very much control the mind, because he knows unless this mind is controlled, I won't develop mystic powers, nor will I be able to leave this material body at the time of death and go to a higher stage. So in Krishna consciousness, our process is actually different. In Krishna consciousness, we don't fight with the mind. The process of chanting and remembering Krishna does everything. I want to give you a classical story which I have once heard, because today we have a very nice ghost, guest with us. It's at, and also our guest might find this story very interesting. It's about a Japanese sword fighter. But how are they called? Samurai? Sumurai? Yes. What?
Samurai or Bushi.
Oh, Bushi, yes. Samurai or Bushi. So, once there was one great samurai general. You must understand, these were such powerful fighters. They could fight, I mean, the good ones could fight with 20 people, or even it is described, there were samurai fighters who could fight with 50 people at once, and no one could actually, hurt them even, because they were so fast that they created an unbreakable shield around themselves. So, there was once, now, it often happened that these great warriors were engaged in had personal conflicts, and they had personal fights with other samurai fighters. So one of the samurai fighter, I forgot his name. His name was quite famous. His name was with O. That's a traditional story. There may be many generals with O, starting with O. So he was fighting with one of his opponents in the forest. Now his opponent was not able to slay him, and he grew weaker and weaker, whereas the general got more furious and more furious by the minute. So this opponent actually was a rogue. He had an friend with him, and when he grew so weak, he just made a certain sound, and his friend came from behind in order to kill the general from behind. Now this is forbidden in the rules of fighting, and it so happened that when this friend was just taking his sword in order to put it from behind in the heart of the general, one merchant was coming by, and he saw what was happening, and he warned the general, "Watch out, someone is coming from behind." So the general just made a circle and he killed this person who was attacking from behind. He just slew, he just separated his head, went clang and made pong, and the person lay down, and then he just easily killed his opponent. So the general wanted to say thank you to the merchant who had just saved his life when he saw that the merchant was his enemy. See, these are all various stories. There's a lot of animosity going on. This merchant, he had actually run away with the dear wife of the general, who from that day on was without his wife. And the general said, "Oh, finally I'm meeting you. Where are you? And what have you done with my wife? Why have you taken her away from me?" And our merchant, when he saw this general, see, these warriors, they were quite some people. They were very honest and very grave and extremely powerful, not only with the body but with the mind. He said, "I'm sorry I was so lusty. This is amongst us human beings. This is natural." So the warrior said, "You may have saved my life, but I have made an oath that when I meet you, you will have to fight this sword with me. I will only fight with one hand, because you are not so expert, but you will have to fight with me, because my honor as a warrior I'm finished in my honor if I don't take my wife away from you, and you have to give her this fighting. But because you saved my life, and I know that you are not very expert in sword fighting, I give you 10 days where you can train to fight with the sword." So this merchant had to learn sword fighting, and he did it by learning from another great samurai warrior. So the samurai warrior who trained him told him, "You only have one chance, and that is the attack. If you do not attack, then if you do not learn to attack, there is no chance that you will be victorious over the general. And if you know how to attack, then the general can fight with two hands. He won't be able to stop you." So he was practicing with his disciple with a bamboo sword, and he just told him, "You just have to attack. That's all I want you to learn, and for that you have to be fearless, because if you are afraid when you attack, your attack will be not a real attack." So for 10 days this merchant ran towards his master, and every time he came, the master just went pong and hit him under the ear, and he fell down unconscious. For 10 days this happened, and the merchant wanted to meet with the general. So on the morning of the 10th day, the merchant understood, "I have nothing to lose, and I will be killed by this general. I just as well give up my fear, and I just attack." And he attacked, and then his master lay on the floor, and he told him congratulations. So then the general met the merchant, and what he saw was he was first of all disappointed, because he saw how the merchant had put all his property before him. These were silken cloth, these were very nice bowls, very nice bowls, and so many nice utensils and ornaments. And when the general came, this merchant took a match and lighted the whole thing, and his whole hut was going up in smoke. In other words, he gave away his material attachment. That's the meaning of this. So when the general saw that, he knew this merchant is very powerful, because he has destroyed his attachment to this world. And then the merchant said to him, I'm going to fight with you today, but I just want you to know that your wife is no longer with me. I have asked her to leave me forever. I have not told her to go to anyone. She might come back to you, I don't know. But the general thought, wow, he has even given up the attachment to a woman. Now this person must be extremely powerful now. And then the merchant attacked. He only knew that. And the rest of the story is not known. In traditional, these are not, you know, just fighting stories where you think who is winning. This is not interesting for someone, for a samurai warrior. For a samurai warrior, the only thing which is interesting is if you are able to give up attachments to this material world. Of course, and I again have to say this, it is extremely difficult to do that, because this is not just a mental gymnastics, or this giving up attachment is not the result of just attitude which comes out of fear or something, but it is a result of I cannot speak so much now for the samurai tradition, because we would have to enter the philosophy of Tao, the philosophy of, and this is a great subject, and I do not want to enter this now, because it will take too long, and one would have to do it full justice. But it is enough to say that this is the crux of, or the crux means, how do you say in a more common way? This is a key to success also in other traditions which are spiritually oriented. You have to give up your attachment to the material world. This is very difficult. This is very difficult. Especially in this age, we sometimes might like to hear these old stories and think, oh, I can be like the merchant. I give up eating the good taste and Kuglitze. I won't eat Kuglitze in the evening. But this is not such a easy thing where you can just think, oh, well, now I'm self-realized, my mind is concentrated. Especially in this age, it is almost impossible to control the functions of the mind, which are accepting and rejecting. But by the process of Krishna consciousness, whereby you slowly develop your higher taste, it is easily possible. Therefore, when you look at these when one looks at these devotees, they can actually live a spiritual life even in the midst of Beograd. I have seen this many, many times, how people just marvel about the devotees. The devotees, sometimes they look like simple people with no teeth, they look like not very artistic, not very intellectual, but they are victorious over their minds by engaging them in the positive service of Krishna, and this slowly brings them to the stage where they actually have transcendental perception. Actually, Krishna consciousness is the only movement where you just do that, where people do not work actually in the material sense. They really have managed to give up their material identities. Therefore, for every new bhakta, have had to take on a material body. Now, Prabhupada, he makes the point very clear. He says, attachment is a natural function of consciousness. Wherever there is consciousness, there you will see attachment. Even in the plant, if you notice the plant, as we all know, has also consciousness, because there is a dusha in there, a soul, dusha, right? Soul in there. And you can see how the plant is growing towards the light. It's very attached to the sun. Have you noticed? It's very attached to the sun. So wherever there is consciousness, even in the most lowest forms, there must be attachment. Cannot be in a different. It cannot go elsewhere. I mean, it is completely naive to say, I will just stop attachment. Anyone who says like this, he really has not understood. Even if the yogi is sitting there and you just think, I'm not thinking of women, I'm not thinking of McDonald's. sweets also by McDonald's. Still, he will be attached to something. He will be attached to his own powers. And think, oh, I'm such a powerful yogi. And this, again, is a presentation of false ego, because these powers are simply given to him. He is not the creator of these powers. These powers also don't belong to him. They will leave him after some time again. So he's completely under the control of material nature, only in a different way than ordinary conditions. So to give up attachment means to positively fix your attachment in the spiritual dimension. In Krishna consciousness, for instance, we like to sing and dance Krishna's holy name. So someone might criticize us in the beginning. Oh, this dancing is just like disco dancing. Like, I must say, I was a great dancer in my in my life before Krishna consciousness. I would dance for many hours and not stop. No one was able to stop. Even if I could not stop dancing. I was dancing so much. I was known as a very wild dancer. Everyone wanted to invite me for the party. So now I'm sometimes dancing, but because devotees are new, I'm not really dancing as much as I would like. Otherwise, everyone would be amazed, and all other dancing would stop, and everyone would just look. So I'm not feeling a little shy at the association of devotees. Such great personalities, I can't just. Anyway, one day you will see. Especially if Saurya Swami is near, then we both of us will dance very wild. So, anyways. So someone might say, just look, he was a dancer then, now he's also dancing. But this is a little different, because we are dancing now to the rhythm of a different music. We are dancing to the rhythm of spiritual music. And someone might say, well, eating is very nice. Now, you also like to eat. I have seen the devotees in Krishna consciousness, they eat about 10 times as much as an ordinary living entity. I mean, I have seen this with my own eyes. If you look at Bhakta Radhavan's plate during a Sunday feast, I mean, this is fascinating how much he can eat. But again, the substance is different. It is offered to Krishna in love and affection, and it is has a spiritual effect. One of my friends, it is Rainer Schulte from Berlin. He is making films, and he is a devotee. He chants 16 rounds. He's now a famous film producer. Not really famous, but a well-known person. He makes for TV and for the cinema. And he told me the way he came to Krishna consciousness is, he was also a cook, so he heard in a lecture that if you offer something with mantra, it becomes spiritualized. So he made a simple carrot preparation and offered that. And when he tasted the carrot preparation, he called all his friends, and the friends took it, and they thought, oh, this is different. Have you put a new drug into this? And he said, no. It is duchon. It is spirit duchon, right? What? Duchovnov. It is duchovnov. It is spiritual. Ah, they said. Very interesting. So, it is a fact that by bringing things into contact with Krishna, they become spiritualized. Just like if you have iron, an iron bar, and you put it into fire. The iron is, there's still iron there, but in addition to it, there is fire. So by sacrificing your lives for Krishna, there is still eating going on, and still singing and dancing, and even joking, and so on. But it is completely spiritualized. And you can see this when you meet devotees and you talk with them, you understand these people are from a different world. This was when I was in Hamburg, still in material life. I was actually afraid to go and talk to the devotees, because I knew, in my understanding, they are from a different world. They are so different. Maybe they don't know German, and maybe they don't understand my language. Even if they know German, maybe they do not understand, and I will be embarrassed. But they understood me. So fix your attachment on Krishna consciousness. On your the easiest is you become attached to one devotional service, which brings you the blessings of Krishna and the spiritual master. For instance, Sankirtan. If you become attached to Sankirtan and you do everything for helping others to come to Krishna consciousness, you will see how you receive very quickly the blessings which will transform your whole life into something extraordinary. This is the best tip for you, because you were asking a personal question. Just fix your attention and your attachment on the orders of the spiritual master. Then it will be very easy to progress. Otherwise, it will be very, very difficult. And we have to practice that, because due to our false ego, we are attached to so many things which come out of our own planning and out of our own mind. But if we follow those own planning and these own minds, we will be always entangled in material life. However, if we can follow the outside instructions of a person who is on the spiritual platform, or who represents at least the spiritual platform, then we can be easily be freed from the cage of our material attachment and enter into the kingdom of the spiritual world. Good. I think we have come to a natural end, because it is already quite late. So I just wanted to thank you all. I'm leaving tomorrow very early before the morning program, and I wanted to thank you all. It was a very nice time in Beograd. And I once again, before leaving, I mean, we have to tonight this program in the Studentske Platovsky. Amongst devotees, we are meeting for the last time, so to say. I again wanted to tell you my perception of staying here with you for 1 week, yes, a full week, even a little more than a week, is that Krishna, people in Yugoslavia are so interested in spiritual life. Yesterday we had this nice program in Panchava, in the morning they had sold only 6 tickets, so the organizers thought, well, maybe we should not have this program at all. He thought, why heat up the place if only 6 people come? But then we just put a few posters up, and the radio told about the program, and in the evening it was completely full. The hall was, we had to put more chairs in, and people were waiting in the cold to get entrance, and then they wanted to ask questions. More and more, we could have gone very long, because they were so curious to know. And nice questions, nice people. So I'm just wanting to encourage you. You have such a nice field for Krishna consciousness. Here you can actually put your life into something valuable, spreading this great movement for the benefit of the human society. People are willing to take it out of your hands. And if you become a little serious in your own Krishna consciousness, wonders will happen here. Now we try to get this temple, and we spoke yesterday with Vlada, and there are very good chances that Krishna will give us a big place where we can receive lots of people. So please take this very serious and make your life perfect, bring your life towards perfection in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.